webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, September 9, 2009, the only 09-09-09 in the history of the world. Let us continue to make it a great one. Welcome in on this Wednesday night edition of Glenn Klein Online. Yes, indeed, this is the only time ever that we will have an 09-09-09. And it's a historic webcast in many ways, ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready to celebrate our third anniversary next month. But before we get into all of that, let's welcome in the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution. Let's all stand and sing Hail to the Chief to Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Well, Glenn, I hate to offer a correction right here at the very start of this to my dear friend. But there will be another 09-09-09.
What?
In 21-09.
Well,
right.
No, that'll be 109. This is 09.
Anyway, thank you for the greeting. It's good to be here.
Yeah, well, there'll be a 3009.
There will be a 3009, yep. And, so, you know, I guess everything repeats no matter what it is. Except for today. And this is the only that will ever be.
It is indeed.
And the sun has set in Texas already. I see a little light in the sky, but this day is waning. But one thing that hasn't waned is the veracity of the power of the gospel, nor the power of the cross that redeemed the world, whether anybody knows it or not, accepts it or not, believes it or not. It's an awesome thing to have something that is so powerfully consistent in a world where things seem to be marked by inconsistency more than anything else. That is for sure.
Exactly right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we greatly appreciate hearing from you tonight. We've got a couple of emails already queued up, but whether you're listening live or on the archives, your email comments and questions are always desired at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Send those to webcast@gospelrevolution.com. If you're listening live anywhere around the world and it's a little after 9 o'clock on the east coast of the United States, wherever you happen to be listening, please get on the phone and let us hear from you. We want to hear your comments and your perspectives, your questions, at 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. We always like to get a caller on quickly here because that gets the ball rolling, the momentum going in the right direction. And so we want to hear from you. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran is in studio, waiting to hear from you in the Tampa Bay studios at Glenn Klein Online, and we'll get you through right away. Well, the President of the United States just addressed a joint session of Congress about the health care reform attempt. And Michael, if everybody was just a good, charismatic, tongue-talk, believing, word-of-faith Christian, we would need health care reform because everybody could just be supernaturally and divinely healed.
We just wouldn't need it, and I would guarantee you if it were, had worked for anybody, it would have spread from that one to the next one to the next one, and it would have been so provable that no one would have chosen any other form of health care, for sure. And, insurance companies and healthcare would really be in trouble for sure.
You know,
but we did offer that. Oh my gosh, I remember the day when we proclaimed that, you know, just exactly the right kind of faith was all it took, and you would always, always get your miracle, always, and it don't work.
We talked about the fact that the guys that are the lead teachers of this, guys like Kenneth Copeland and Kenneth Hagin and Creflo Dollar and Norval Hayes, so many. I mean,
pretty long list.
The list goes on and on. Really, the hypocrisy has been overwhelming. But it just reminds me that here, Norval Hayes, who wrote a famous book called How to Live and Not Die, the last contact indirectly you had with him was when your sister ran into him a few weeks ago at a dentist's office.
Yeah.
Now,
what's that about?
If you could have a formula that would guarantee that you would live and not die, you would think at the very least that it could take care of your teeth.
Tooth care, yeah. Yeah, you know, and here's the thing. This is what's so difficult for me. You know, even with the, I acknowledge that what I went through was nothing less than abuse. I don't think that Norval intended to abuse me. I don't think that the original intent was to use me. But the fact of it is that that is exactly what happened. And you know, according to the doctrine that he taught me, he should have never been in a dentist office. You know, I remember when he condemned his own daughter Zona for going in for a kidney transplant, and he openly said that the only reason she had to do that is because she didn't have any faith. I don't know if he would admit that the reason he was at the dentist office is that he had no faith, but here's the difficulty I have. I love that man. I really do. I have some of the fondest memories that a human being could ever have. And if people think that it has been easy to separate a part of my life that I absolutely loved to be able to embrace the truth, they are greatly mistaken. I don't need to demonize the people I was around to be able to embrace something that is different than what they preached to me. I don't have to believe that they were evil. I don't have to believe that their every intent was bad. I believe that what they taught me was wrong, and that's really where it starts and where it ends. Now, there's an awful lot of things that go along with a belief system, and I do believe, as I have said many times, that someone's religion, you know, can cause them to be way less kind than what their hearts are. And thus I coined the phrase many years ago, and the question and the challenge is that, you know, when your heart is kinder than your religion, guess which one's wrong? And I think it's a really good measure for us to have when it comes to the issues of the heart, and especially where it comes to believing or understanding anything about the gospel or what that might entail. But see, I had to separate my belief and my understanding from people I loved, Glenn. I didn't separate it from people I hated, from people that I detested, from people that I knew at the time were either using me or abusing me at all. And I was getting away from my users and abusers, so I came up with this doctrine in opposition to them. That did not happen to me. I parted with these people as moderately and as delicately as I possibly could. And let me say this: I never cut the ties with them. Now, had they been abusing me, had they been being abusive to me, believe me, no problem at all cutting the ties with disrespect and abuse. That's not a problem. But I have never, ever, ever cut ties with anybody because of their beliefs. That has never happened. It will never happen with me whatsoever. So, but with Norval and those people, that was a time in my life that I admit that I look back on fondly. I look back on this time with a great deal of with a smile on my face. I mean, it really is amazing that this has been a part of my life, and I don't have to demonize the people who were involved to separate myself from the doctrine that I was involved in.
Yeah, but you have said many times that a lot of these leaders know exactly what they're doing.
I think at some point they have to know. And now the reason that I said that is because I don't believe that I'm smarter than anybody else. I just don't believe that. And I believe that if my life came to a point to where that I begin to see that these doctrines were abusive and that these doctrines were dividing people rather than bringing people together, I just cannot believe that anyone who has taken the path of ministry in any degree and followed any kind of doctrine who has not come to a point to say, wait a minute, this isn't working like I said it does or said it that it should. And, you know,
well, why
and
do
the
you
thing
think that it continues? I mean, obviously, there's been, you know, attempts to, whether it be Benny Hinn or whoever, to empty out hospital rooms and you know, do people continue in this because just out of wishful thinking? It's kind of like, you know, President Obama tonight got up and said that this program is not going to cost us any money. It's only going to save us money. I don't know of a government program that's ever been started that has saved money, let alone not cost more than what they thought it was going to cost. And is it just wishful thinking? Is it naivete? What is it?
Well, I'm not sure exactly why that people continue on in a religious bent. It's and for each individual, there's one thing that I definitely know, and that I was able to observe about somebody who is virtually someone who does not have any notoriety at all, and they wind up on a stage with the praises of people and with funds coming in that you've never had before in your life. And virtually every one of these men in the ministry that you know, that we have talked about, all were virtual paupers to start out with. And either that or totally obscure and not knowing what it was like to have the praises of people, one of the two or both of them. And the stage is an amazing place. And I had to stop and ask myself after the point where I realized that, quote, the deliverance from homosexuality did not work, why did I keep saying it? Because it's not like I'm exempt from having done the very same thing that these other guys have done. But, and I eventually did, at the peril of losing my popularity and losing my income, which I lost both of them. But I tell you, it is an incredible thing for somebody who has never experienced that type of acceptance and praise from people, or the income that can come from it, once you get caught up in it, to be able to turn around and walk away from it. Because it took me years to be able to do it. Now, the years that it took me to do it wasn't just to break away from the praises, nor to break away from the funds. I believed the doctrine. I believed what I was saying. I believed that the only one that couldn't do it was me. That I was the only one who was failing at this. That this really did work, and that it was just me who could not get this right. And that if I kept saying the truth had to be true, whether it worked for me or not, that if I kept saying it, that it would work for others. And my turnaround point came when I began to hear of the suicides of young men who had listened to me and were more sincere, not more sincere, but more honest than I was at the time about the whole issue of the sexuality. And they believed that if it worked for me, but you see, they believed a lie. They believed it worked for me. So if they believed it worked for me, and if it didn't work for them, it meant that God reject them, and it cost people their lives. So I still stand very strongly to say that these doctrines are dangerous. They are very, very dangerous. But the people that I learned these things from, they're still just human beings. Who, whether, you know, and I don't know why they're still doing it. I don't know if they're still doing it because they actually believe it and they have deluded themselves to think that this fairy tale is real. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if I don't know if they're doing it deceptively, but that's one thing that I take great peace in. Is that it is not my job. It is not my job to judge their hearts. It is, however, my job, according to Isaiah, the prophet who spoke about this gospel of peace, that every tongue that rises in judgment, I am supposed to condemn that. I am supposed to condemn doctrines. I am supposed to condemn what comes out of people's mouths. That is filled with judgment in pertaining to relationship with God, pertaining to this incredible gospel of grace and gospel of peace. When people say that it's by works and it's not by works, when the people say that God is angry or God's displeased or that you have to win his favor, I have to openly condemn that, which I have been faithful to do, and you've helped me. You've helped me a great deal to be faithful to do that and have done it yourself. And so many of the people who listen do that, you know, very strongly. And, you know, this is just a part of this thing called the gospel revolution that, you know, that I still stand by. I don't foresee, I don't have anything in my heart that tells me that that's going to change anywhere in the near future, at least. The one thing that I do know is that my mind has changed about a lot of things over the years. But the mind changes that I've had, Glenn, have been more toward the absolute fulfillment of the work of the cross. I don't expect to go a different direction than that.
This is the Gospel Revolution webcast, Glenn Klein Online with Michael Williams, president of the Gospel Revolution, telling it like it is, as we always try to do each and every week. 1-800-436-3260. We would like you to tell it like it is by getting on the horn and giving us a call tonight. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran, our engineer and producer, and call screener extraordinaire, waiting to take your call. 1-800-436-3260, or you can email us, as always, at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Well, we mentioned that today is a unique date in history, 9909, and we had an occurrence happen in Mexico City, starting in Cancun this afternoon, when a Bolivian religious fanatic, as this is being reported, hijacked a passenger jet from the Mexican resort city of Cancun after receiving, quote, a divine revelation selecting the date 9909 because it is the satanic number 666 turned upside down. This came from Mexico's security secretary. Public security, public safety secretary Garcia Luna says that Jose Mar Flores, who was 44, used a fake bomb to hijack the plane and ordered the pilot to circle over Mexico City seven times. He told Mexican officials that he wanted to warn Mexican President Felipe Calderon of an impending earthquake. The Bible-carrying hijacker allegedly used a juice can, he said was a bomb to hold the 103 passengers and the plane's crew on the tarmac for more than an hour before they were released, and Flores was arrested. Christ is coming soon, a smiling Flores told reporters after he was detained. As the plane was landing, Flores stood up and showed his contraption to a flight attendant, saying he and three others were hijacking the plane. After it landed at the airport, there a standoff ensued until mass police stormed the aircraft with their guns drawn and escorted several handcuffed men away without firing a shot. Police later said there was only one hijacker. Flores later told the police his three companions were, quote, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Bless his heart. That's now, the thing we say in the South when it's like we don't want to just call them stupid. We just say, oh, bless their heart.
Now, of course, you know, our religious leaders would not go to the extent of suggesting a hijacking, but certainly it is not a huge stretch to say that much of their end times teachings on so-called end time doctrine and prophecy inspired this guy.
Sure, it's like any ideological thing that knows no restraint or knows no influence other than its own thinking. That's just the way these things go. It drives people to the edge. I don't know, what was he doing on 060606?
I thought when things are satanic and they're the opposite, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, I'd like to ask him, what were you doing on 060606? I mean, aren't you a little late here? So.
Well, you know, people were expecting bad things to happen on that day, but here we still are.
Well, no doubt. And you know, let's even go to the other extreme and say that, you know, that he was supposed to warn all of Mexico about an impending earthquake. Let's say it happens, as earthquakes do. Who's going to listen to him? I mean, doesn't God know that doing that is stupid? It never ceases to amaze me how ignorant people must think God is himself to think that he would be able to stand behind and endorse some of the radical, fanatical statements and comments that they have to make. It's just unbelievable.
Well, of course, those people that would do things like this and even less radical or crazy things would say that, well, God had people do some very radical things. We know the flying around Mexico City seven times, that had biblical significance to him, kind of like walking around Jericho, marching around before Joshua and the children of Israel.
But that was not a forewarning for those guys. That was just what God told them to do. Now, there are things, other things, though, that in the Old Testament that were warning. Certainly Noah went around saying, there's coming a flood. There's coming a flood. And everybody mocked him. I do believe, though, that all of those things, as I believe it is Paul's quote said, that all of these things were written for those of us to whom the ends of the earth were to come upon. And the end came 2,000 years ago. The reason for all of those things to happen was to draw attention to the issue at hand, which was the redemption of the world. And now, the only thing that I know is that the Holy Spirit is working with us to help us to reveal the gospel to the planet. And but I'm unaware of any prophetic things that need to be done or to be foretold. You know, especially when I think about all the tragedies that we've experienced. And, you know, and Pat Robertson, you know, predicts hurricanes that never manifest and disasters that never culminate, and Van Impe and all of the rest of them. But when you think about the real tragedies that are that has taken place, why didn't they prophesy before those? You know, we just don't have it, you know. Nobody prophesied that 9/11 was going to take place.
Rodney Howard Brown has got an interpretation.
Oh yes, I know. He definitely does. But it's amazing that that God would say something through somebody that nobody listens to, especially the people who were in the area. So what was that supposed to do, even if it did happen, which it is a very great stretch of the imagination? It's like trying to incorporate Nostradamus into current world events.
As they're doing, they're predicting a big occurrence in December 21st of 2012.
As they are doing. And it's not just Nostradamus. The church has latched on to that date now.
Yeah.
And
that'll be the next big one.
Yeah, the next big one. And as I have done through the last probably at least four big ones, like what we're talking about in 12, can I go ahead and prophesy tonight?
Oh, please do.
There ain't nothing going to happen.
Thus saith the Lord, ain't nothing going to happen.
Ain't nothing going to happen. It's going to come, it's going to go. Now, here's the thing, though. You know, if something like this is this serious, that Nostradamus predicted it, what, 500 years ago?
Whatever it was, yeah.
Whatever, something to that magnitude. If the church is on board with it, the prophecy mongers are all over it also. Now, they're all saying 2012. They might not all agree on December. I think the Nostradamus thing is definitely December. Now, here's a voice willing to stand up and say, ain't nothing gonna happen. You would think, as I have done in the last four situations, where the world was put on alert, and I had the wherewithal is a nice word, isn't it? I had the wherewithal to put myself on the line and say, there ain't nothing going to happen. You'd think I'd get a little credit for that. Or that they would get just a little bit of, you were wrong. But it hasn't happened the last four times. And I'm not staking my future on accolades that I will get from predicting that December of 12 or any time in 12 will culminate in a tragedy that will be the beginning of the end or the end of the world.
Well, we're just about halfway through of this webcast, and glad to have online from beautiful Canton, Ohio, Mr. Tim Knappenberger. Tim!
Hey, Glenn, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for waiting.
Well, Mike, I first wanted to thank you. I'm a first-time caller, but one of my three best friends, who I think you've talked to before, Tom Tomsky, got me started listening to your CDs.
Oh, of course.
And Tom and I have been out here on this wilderness journey that we thought we were the only ones out here for about the last 7 to 10 years. And then we started listening to others going online. And when we heard you, everything that Tom and I sit and talk about week in and week out, you were giving voice to. So from the bottom of our hearts, from the bottom of my heart, I can't tell you enough. Just thank you. You've been a blessing more than I can put into words.
Well, thank you very much. It's very affirming to have that happen in reverse also, to have people call in. A lot of times I've over the years I've had people to come up to me and say, "Wow, I used to think I was completely crazy for thinking this," and I said, and they say, "Thank you for letting me know that, you know, that I'm not crazy." I said, "Now wait. Now that's not what this means. It doesn't mean that you're not crazy. It just means there's two of us now."
Well, that's absolutely right. And just in the past week, I decided instead of getting all of Tom's free CDs that he would burn of your messages, and then I would download onto my MP3 and listen to them, I decided to send my money in, and so I did sign up for Gospel Logic here in the last week. So I can now come out of the closet and admit that.
Well, now you know what our copyright law is.
Yeah, we can't charge as long as we just give it away.
It's the law. You got to copy them.
Okay. Well, Mike, let me bring up a question, though, that comes up when Tom and I and another good friend of ours, Rick, we meet on Sunday mornings pretty, I hate to say the word religiously, but pretty routinely, because all three of us have wearied of organized religion, but we still love the fellowship and we love Jesus Christ with all our hearts. Here's a question that has come up, and all of us kind of scratch our head with this one. So I'm going to try to articulate it, and then either you direct me to one of your series that maybe you've already addressed this issue, or just have at it, okay? We all believe strongly in what you teach about what we believe Paul teaches about of the finished work of Christ, all right? And one of the things with organized religion that we have, well, I'll speak personally, that I have struggled with is the vending machine God. Okay, with the vending machine God, put very simply, is where our prayers are almost like sticking a quarter in the ear of God to try to get something dispensed, something, you know, God, if I just pray hard enough, long enough, loud enough, sincere enough, you will dispense something that I need. Okay. Where we've come, though, now seeing a lot of the same things that you talk on and preach about, is that it's all done, it's all finished, and basically it is all Christ. So that leaves me then with the question, Mike, when we pray, sometimes we're not sure, our prayer life has all changed. All three of us agree that our prayer life has changed. And my question, I guess, Mike, is there still a role for supplication in our prayer, for going to God and asking for this cosmic spiritual Father power to intervene in a personal way in our lives? Or is it more just the revelation of Christ in us and just letting what happens in this life happen and somehow being at peace with that? Does that make sense of what I'm trying to...
Tim, you said it very well.
Very articulate, for sure. You can tell that you have muddled over this a lot, for sure.
Well, please have at that. Let me give you one quick story, okay, just to try to frame what I'm saying, and then I'm going to shut up. 3 years ago, I went through a very transitional time in my life. I went through my midlife crisis, you know, which I guess everybody has to do that. I made a major career move. I walked away from a job. I without income, without, whatever, nervous breakdown, you name it, the whole nine yards. And during that period, Tom Tomsky, my good buddy, kind of walked through me with it the whole way. So if he's listening, he's smiling now because he knows what that time was like. And during that time, I was praying as I have prayed through all my life, Lord, reveal yourself. Lord, help me see something. Lord, just get me through the day. Whatever it is, Lord, do it. The way this whole story turned out, to make a very long story short, was I now have moved into a new career, and I love it. It has fit me perfectly in my life. It just fit the bill. I came out of the funk, came out of the depression, came out of the crisis. I'm in a much better place. Whatever. All right. So my question is, do I attribute that to God's intervention from the pleas of one of his children, and somehow God's hand moved through space and time and came down to little planet Earth and moved into the life and the situation of Tim Knappenberger, or is it the fact that the spirit that he has placed within me, Christ that lives within me, somehow just moved in and allowed me to come to this place that I now am at, and would have maybe got here without those interventive pleading supplication prayers? Okay, I hope that makes sense, Mike.
It makes so much sense. All I have to say is number two.
Okay, elaborate a little bit if you would, but that'll help.
Yeah, no, it is. My observation has been this over my years involved in the gospel, whatever form I have preached or taught. I believe that when we teach that this term, God answers prayer, I believe that we create two groups of people, predominantly two groups of people, and that is either we create unbelievers because they realize that it has not worked, or we create delusional people who can twist anything that they prayed into the event that happened as being the ultimate result of their prayer, because ultimately, quote, God knows best anyway. I don't want to be on either side of that. And the thing that you will hear me teach time and time again is that my prayer life has come completely down to one thing, and that is thanksgiving. In everything, give thanks. I have found it to be very productive for me if I remain truly thankful. I can tell you that my most difficult times in my life have been when I have been unthankful, and I have magnified the problem more than I have, quote, magnified the Lord. And the fact that the God in me, I believe, Tim, in the completely finished work of the cross. I do not believe that there is any activity needed, any response required, any reaction necessary from God for there to be the impact and the influence of the cross in our daily lives. I do believe that the Holy Spirit's attempt is to help us in all of these situations, but it's not trying to get us connected with God. It is trying to bring out of us, which I believe the gospel in and of itself does, to bring out of us that which is within. If there's anything coming to our lives, and let me tell you something, every time something wonderful happens, I say, thank you, Jesus. This is not that I have disconnected or disassociated Jesus or God from the events in my life. But you see, I also, this is my perception, whether I always do it or not, but in everything to give thanks. Because I truly believe that from that mindset, it gives us the clearest view of how to make the next step in life, is from a thankful heart. And without that, without thanksgiving, we become so absorbed in the current situation, good or bad. You can get so absorbed in the good situation that you miss the next step. Or you can get so absorbed in the bad situation that you miss your next step. This life is so incredibly complicated. I don't think that I would have, and of course this is where my buddies, all of us who spoke in tongues, would say, well, then you just got to speak in tongues about it instead of praying. In words, you got to pray in tongues. I don't know that I would know how to pray about any specific thing. So it would either be tongues or Thanksgiving for me, one of the two. The only thing that I understand now about speaking in tongues is that it is something that edifies myself. It is not necessary for anyone to do, to experience God on a greater level or greater dimension. So that's me. That's what my entire life has come down to. I don't pray for anybody or anything. Uh-huh. I give thanks.
In whatever happens.
Doesn't make any difference, yeah.
Right.
Now that is the perception. I'm not telling you that I do that all the time, but that is what I believe. Is that the offering of my response of thankfulness is to my best credit and to best advantage to be able to move forward in from wherever I am in life. Whether things are going good, if things are going good, I still need to move forward. If they're going bad, I still need to move forward. And I think that the greatest possibility that I might have to know what the next step is to be to have an attitude like, you know, what we've said back in the day, have an attitude of gratitude. I really do believe that that is a very powerful thing to come from in our lives. I remember, the little song that I learned as early as I could learn how to speak. Count your blessings. Name them one by one. Count your blessings. See what God has done. I think focusing in on the good things that are happening, regardless of how bad the things that are happening, that's the idea. I'm not telling you that I always do this correctly. Not that there's an absolutely correct way to do it. It's just life. But I think that I've answered your question in the fact that I don't pray for anybody. I don't pray for anything. And I have watched things just like in the financial realm. In the last 2 years, the financial situation in my life has brought me from a point of being homeless, living in somebody's home in their spare bedroom from place to place, to having my own home. From not even being able to afford having my own car to having a pretty decent car. I could tell you how that God worked that all out and come up with a story and connect the dots, but I can tell you that pertaining to my finances, I have not prayed one time, and they have gotten better. Now, I can tell you other parts of my life that have gotten worse without prayer, too, but...
Well, thank you, Mike, because that does help, and you're saying the things that the three of us have been talking about in the sense that the way that we have been taught to pray, the way that we were instructed. instructed to pray now seems almost foolish in many respects, because if God has done it all, if he is all in all, then what is this thing that we do when we do the supplication, throw ourselves, you know, on the altar, so to speak? And it does seem like kind of an old-fashioned, almost paganistic thing.
I definitely agree with you, and I think it not only applies to prayer, I think it applies to giving. Remember when we taught that if you gave, God would give back to you? You know, that if you do this, God will reward you, all of those things. And I think, for me, they're in a much, much healthier place right now. Now, I can't tell you that my days of deluding myself that those things all worked weren't fun. I did enjoy them.
And that's
what I was trying to get the point across about the people that I was involved with. These were people that I loved. I did not come to these conclusions because I felt that none of this was benefiting me. I mean, my goodness, I was very popular. I was getting wealthier by the day. But it was just simply the truth that was not lining up with all of these things that I had been taught, embraced, and was teaching myself. So for me, it is important that people know that I did not come to this point from absolute disillusion. I come to this point at a high point in my life. I begin to come to these conclusions when I was at my wealthiest, when I was at my greatest popularity, when everybody around me told me that I was the next greatest thing on a stick, you know, that was coming down the pike. And it was obvious to me that they were right. The ability in me to communicate in public was so very real, whether I was saying the truth or not. There was just an ability to communicate. And I never will forget when the reality came to me years ago, Tim, years ago, that the ability that was in me to be able to communicate, that people would believe me, whether I told the truth or told a lie, whoa.
Uh-huh.
That's when I had to really wake up and stop and make this something very personal to me, that it had to be something that it's not just because it brings in the crowds, it's not just because it brings in the money. Do I believe it? And that was the beginning of my demise. So,
but let me stay with that point for a minute, Mike. If I can go on just for a second.
Sure, you may.
Because this thing, and I'm going to call it a thing right now. All right, for lack of a better description. But this movement, this move, maybe it's the move of the spirit. Maybe it's what Paul talks about you know, moving from glory to glory. But this thing that happened to you that you just described, where you were at the peak and it, you know, this truth just started coming out of you that, you know, this stuff that, you know, this religious stuff doesn't make sense anymore. Spirit makes sense. Christ makes sense. What I've been preaching, teaching, whatever doesn't. I came to that point. People like Tom came, Rick came, you know, hundreds or thousands, who knows how many around the world are coming. Is that a progress? Do you see that as what maybe the scripture is talking about, that there is this other world move of the spirit? That's, I didn't ask for this place that I came to, Mike. It doesn't sound like you asked for it either, but something got stripped away. Tom and Rick and I use the term, we walked through the veil. We crossed through the veil, and once you cross through the veil, you can't go back.
Yes. No, I don't disagree with that at all. But I think it's been just as available since the day that Jesus rose from the dead as it is today.
Okay.
Now, why people have chosen not to take that risk and step through that veil, even as we were talking about earlier, you know, Glenn was asking me, did I believe these, why do these people, that I had made the statement, I believe that everybody, all preachers who have been out there long enough have come to the conclusion that this stuff, there's something wrong with this stuff. Uh-huh. And he was asking me, you know, why were they doing it? Were they delusional? Were they, you know, just in it for the money or what? And that's the one thing we'll never know is, you know, why does somebody continue in that? The one thing that I know, as I stated earlier, is I don't believe that I'm any different from anybody else. I don't believe I have the ability to perceive better than anybody else. I don't believe I was, quote, selected by God to do this. It just is. And that is the thing that is most peaceful for me, is to just understand that it just is. And the only thing that makes a difference in this, because I do believe that every human being comes into this world with talents and abilities, gifts from God, if you will. The thing that has made the difference for me is that I have an ability to communicate it. Now, that's really kind of weird, considering I'm a high school dropout. I have never been to Bible school a day in my life. I've taught in Bible schools. I've taught Bible courses in Bible colleges. But I've never been to Bible school a day in my life. Now, I'm not saying that with pride, because I really wish that I could have the little thing on the wall, you know, that says that I'm qualified to do what I do. Because it does open a lot of doors that I beat my head against right now to be able to do. It certainly does open some doors for sure. But
well, Tim, we want to thank you for getting in on this tonight, and don't be bashful, please.
Thank you so much for calling.
Well, thank you, Mike. And thank you, Glenn, too. We'll talk again.
Call anytime.
Please do.
Okay.
All right. There's Tim Knappenberger, ladies and gentlemen, from Canton, Ohio, a reservoir of gospel wisdom. We appreciate Tim's participation. But that opens up a phone line for you, ladies and gentlemen, in our remaining minutes at 1-800-436-3260. Get on the phone and let us hear from you in our time remaining. 1-800-436-3260. We do have a couple emails, Michael, that
Let's
I'd like to get
from.
To at least one. This is from our good pal, Pep Washburn, who I know tonight is actually in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but of course is from Wisconsin. He says, Mike, I'm interested to know your perspective on the creation story. Do you consider it something to be read in a literalistic way? What or how much do you consider as literal? What aspects might be considered allegorical in dealing with things that are beyond the ability of humankind to grasp in an empirical or analytical way? So, and that's from Pep. Do you think, Michael, that the story of creation, 7 days, 6 days and a day of rest, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, is all that literal or is that allegorical?
I personally believe it's literal, and that is that does include my great interest in geology, my great interest in the sciences, evolution, which I have looked at as much as probably more than the average person. But I've not had anything to move me away from that as of yet. Now, it could be all allegorical. If it is allegorical, then it was constructed allegorically to allegorically bring us to the allegoric conclusion of the cross. Because all of everything about the work of Christ and the redemption of the world is based on the truth of the book of Genesis. So it is one of the two. My persuasion, because I've not seen any science yet that disproves it, even though, of course, there are 30,000 scientists who even stand against the global warming issue, and because that they've issued a challenge to Al Gore and the global warming community, 30,000 scientists have issued a challenge to them to openly debate this. They say, well, the debate's over. We already know the truth about this. So they are dismissing the voice of 30,000 scientists who disagree with the whole issue of global warming. And so they, their intent is to bring charges against Al Gore for, can't remember the term they use. I'll have to look at it and get back to you. But anyway, they said if we can't be heard in an open debate forum, we will take it to court and we'll be heard there if they can possibly get it into court. So, you know, it seems as though that the sciences today would totally discount a creation theory. But that's not all scientists who agree on that. And I do realize that people say, now we know that this is a fact, and we know that this has been here this long, we know this has been there that long, but we don't know that for sure. We know that the measurements that we use are telling us that, but we weren't there. We don't have the wherewithal to be able to absolutely say that with absolute conclusion. So,
how critical is it that the story of Adam and Eve and the creation of the world is literal to the gospel?
I don't think that it is it being literal is critical. The fact of it is, though, that it must be allegorically true. And constructed, if it is not absolutely true, it must be absolutely allegorically true, because everything about the gospel is based on the Genesis story. Now, the same reason that I say to the evolutionist, you weren't there, you don't know, I have to say to myself, I wasn't there, I don't know. But as I said, I've not heard information to satisfy myself that would cause me to have a necessity to move away from a literal translation. In fact, I think there's a lot of facts that still back up a literal translation of the book of Genesis.
Well, what we do know is that the current research indicates that the DNA of human beings is now being traced back to an original couple.
Yeah, and that's not by anybody on the Christian side of this or the doctrinal side of this at all. That's just what DNA says. I know that there's many measurements that cannot support the theory that the Earth is billions of years old. There's a lot of measurements that cannot support that. Simple things such as the silt runoff from the oceans or from the rivers into the oceans. They, at current rates anyway, and here's where that we've gotten in trouble on this planet trying to figure it out, but just like with the moon, they know how much moon dust occurs over a certain period of time. And, you know, when they landed on the moon, the one thing that they, the greatest concern was that they were just going to sink in a possible sea of moon dust. And because if the theory was correct that this was all truly billions and billions of years old, that by the current rates of dust that accumulates on the surface of the moon, if that's been going on for billions and billions of years, they were in trouble. But when they got there, it was, you know, whatever it was just a few inches for sure. It wasn't anything that would have supported the current understanding of the accumulation of dust that does accumulate on the surface of the moon. It wouldn't support anything more than 10,000 years. Uh-huh. So it's not as though that this science is absolutely perfect on one side or the other. I think if the sciences become disconnected from the need to prove it ideologically one way or the other, you know, we'll probably have some more answers. But for every answer that comes out that affirms evolution, there's answers that come out that confirm creation. And that's kind of where we are with it right now. But do I need to convince somebody of a literal creation for them to be able to embrace the gospel? No, because even if it is, as Pep put it, allegorical, even if it is, it's still the premise for our understanding of everything that we need to understand about the gospel is rooted in the creation story.
And there's a lot to be understood about the male-female dynamic in there, that even if it is an allegory, well, that it's pretty pertinent, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we could go a long way now.
Yeah. Well, we're up against the clock, and we want to remind everybody that the Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston is coming up in November,
yes.
November 12th through the 15th, and all the information is available at gospelrevolution.com. And it's time for folks to make the reservations not only for the convention but for their rooms, Michael, at the
Gotta get on
Marriott.
The stick. Yeah,
yeah,
our prices are not open-ended with no closing date. We need to get it on. And really, you know, Tom and Tim, you guys, you need to be there. This means way too much to you and to me to have you there. We need people there. And, just stop and think about it, folks. What could be more important in the process of your learning and understanding as far as the gospel is concerned? What event on planet Earth, could possibly be taking place that would be more worth your time being there? And, my friends in Indiana, where I went to speak, what could be more important than participating in something like this? And number one, you get to meet other people who have the concept of the gospel. And the other thing is that the teaching that's going to be done, we're going to have a lot of guests there who will be sharing a lot of things, but I'll be sharing virtually every session and teaching the entire book of Hebrews verse by verse in context. It is going to be a momentous time, and we really want to encourage, I want to personally encourage all the people that I know to make reservations and to get here. You know, for God's sake, this is a good thing. And there's just not a whole lot of things that are going to be happening in the process of this year that could possibly benefit you more or that you would enjoy more pertaining to the issue and the subject of the gospel. So come on down. It's Houston.
Houston in November, you can't beat it. The weather was gorgeous last year, and the camaraderie and the fellowship was fantastic. And
it's amazing.
I'm sure it's going to be equally good or better in 2009.
We're looking forward to it.
And you guys, if you have any questions, you can call the Office of the Gospel Revolution or email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com with any questions about the convention or anything else. For those of you that listen on the archive, we know that most folks do just out of convenience sake. And just feel free to fire off an email at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Well, Mikey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you, and we appreciate you folks listening. I want to thank Tim Knappenberger from Canton, Ohio, for joining in. As always, Sean O'Halloran for producing and engineering this webcast. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!